This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho.
Men in Blazers world headquarters, David.
It's the Men in Blazers podcast. Still trying to get over that game. Still trying to get over that game yesterday, Rog.
Historic. Yeah, I got over it when something called the final whistle blew.
Yeah, a halftime whistle.
This is a historic podcast, David.
It is.
It's
Why,
a different
Rog?
World we're living in.
What is the world we're living in?
It's a world in which I honestly only imagined could ever exist in my lifetime. A world in which there's an American coach.
Oh, that's it.
An American gaffer.
Yeah.
In the Premier League.
Yeah.
A 58-year-old from Montclair, New Jersey.
Yep.
On the sideline.
Yep. Nobody in England understands a word he's saying.
What to do? Yeah, yeah. That's what subtitles and translators are for, mate. I think it is absolutely phenomenal, and we will break down Bob Bradley's cherry-popping exploits up at the Emirates.
I think you're a little bit too excited about it. I'm just going to say that at the beginning. I think we need to... I think everybody needs to calm down a little, control expectations. Let's let him manage a few games.
Yep.
Let's see how he does.
Yep. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't look at it with as someone who loves football and America and the growth of the game that you love in the country that you love. It is a ceiling that has been broken, and it is a thing of wonder. And it may work, it may not, and we will not know this week, we will not know next week, we will not know for, you know, 6-7 games to come. But it's still, I think, an absolutely exhilarating piece of narrative to witness, and one to which I will never be inured from an excitement perspective.
No, an amazing achievement to get there will be an even more amazing achievement if he succeeds, Rog.
God willing. Talking about imaginary worlds, David, that I never thought would come to pass. Have you been watching Westworld?
I've not been watching Westworld, Rog. Tell me about
it. The new HBO smash.
Yeah, is it a smash?
It is a smash sensation. It is. I know, I'm watching it.
Yeah.
Lexi's watching
therefore
it.
Must be, if you and Lexi are watching it, it must be a smash.
There. The ratings are meant to be quite phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
If you've not watched it, we won't ruin it. It's about a futuristic amusement park built for rich pleasure seekers, aka American tourists.
Yeah.
Spend time in wild western settings, and they're surrounded by these kind of AI, these artificial intelligence, robotic humans who exist solely so that the vacationers can live out their fantasies without any consequences at all.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your friends would enjoy it,
David.
This is
an old movie, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a 1973 Michael Crichton movie.
Yeah.
Yul Brynner.
Yeah, my dad loves this
in his finest.
Movie.
Redone in the HBO series. It's got the remarkable Jeffrey Wright, who's just, oh, I just love watching him. He's got the countenance of a really amazing rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one problem, David, I've got with it.
Which is?
I wanted to talk to you about it. I find it hard to believe that if you would pay, and I think they pay $40,000 a day to go on this, the vacationers, if you could pay huge amounts of money to go anywhere where you can do anything for your kicks, whatever your kicks may be, Davo, and you could go back to any period in history, would you really go to a wild western town? Because when I look at people living in the Wild West, I just think of all that dust that must settle in their underpants. And I just fear skin chapping. It doesn't seem that exciting to me, David.
Yeah.
I want to, like, if you could go anywhere in the world, JW immediately when asked in this, he said, I'm going to go to the colonial period.
Yeah. Great. He's a loyalist.
Great
He's
patriot.
He loves the monarchy.
Great patriot.
Yeah.
That he is. Lexi immediately didn't even have to think. What does she say?
Wants to go to the future.
Wants to go to the future. Future. Because the future is going to be better than the past.
Yeah, but she's not having to work with us, probably. It would be the number one reason why
no,
she wants to
be
go
our
to the
boss.
Future.
She'll be our boss.
She already we'll is our boss. Her. She already is, Rod.
She imagines.
Hate to break this to
she
you.
She imagines in the future she'll travel everywhere in a little horse and trap, and she'll crack a whip, and little Davo and little Roger will run forward down Broadway. It'll be amazing.
Yeah, it would
we won't be,
good. Be
allowed to talk. It'll be fantastic. Yeah. If you could go to any time, Davo, any place where Davos would be most appreciated, where you just tessellate with the surroundings, where would you go?
You know, I had an initial reaction to this and then realized it's completely wrong. I've always loved the idea of America in the 1930s. You know, that sort of, you know, coming out of the Depression sort of as America is just like getting its mojo back again.
When jazz cigarettes were everywhere.
Yeah, I sort of just love that whole idea of this period, and I love sort of finding that part of New York. I love the whole thing. I had a cocktail this past Sunday. I played tennis at the Vanderbilt Tennis Club.
On the Lower East
just
Side.
Above Grand Life Central Station. And then I had a Manhattan in that wonderful bar that overlooks Grand Central Station. I thought, this has not changed. This room, this bar has not changed, you know, forever. That was just 1930s.
Gilded Ages.
Would have been an amazing time.
My family would be living 12 to a room on the Lower East Side. It would not
exactly,
be so
exciting. But this is sort of the problem, is that the reality is that no young man could have come from Southeast London like me and sort of broken into American society in the 1930s. No one could have had that opportunity. And the reality is, when anybody looks back and says, oh, America isn't what it used to be, you know what? America is a much better country than it was at any time ever before.
Let me prove it to you. Anyone who says it's not, just let me prove it to you. How many coaches did you have in the Premier League
yeah,
before?
You're right.
And how many do you have now?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So America is a better country than it's ever been than at any point in its history. Britain is a better country than it's ever been. As much as we talk about the decline of Britain, it's a better place. It is a better place.
Better place because we're not in it. It's better for those that do live in it because we're not there.
But in terms of people's attitudes, in terms of liberalism, in the small L version of that word.
Much rather live in the Middle Ages when life is nasty, brutish and short
really,
if you're given the choice. Yeah, in a castle.
And so, like, why would I not want to be 22 today, graduating from college and living in 2016 in America? That's where I'd rather be.
Neil Diamond. So you want to live in the present?
Definitely want to live, but I just want to
be. And save the $40,000 a day that you need to pay to go to Westworld.
I just want to be a bit younger, actually quite a lot younger. Have my hair back.
No,
and not be so great.
Really?
Well, no, maybe.
Don't
do I look better?
Say
I would
that.
Have worn
That's
now
insane.
When I look. I would have worn my hair a little bit differently.
Balding is truth. You've done something awfully fancy with your hair.
Balding is truth, mate. I'd like to be younger now. I don't want to be an old version of me with hair. I want to be a younger version of me, Rod, right now. How about you, Rog?
Top three.
Yeah.
Number one.
Yeah. Not that you've prepared for this in any way.
Pre-Holocaust Germany.
Why?
So I could kill Hitler.
Okay, we've been there before.
Love to do that.
How would the opportunity have presented itself and how would you have done it?
I would insinuate myself into his social circle as mate with my breakdancing skills, which would have been very popular in probably the Berlin beer killers. Yeah. They wouldn't this dance from the future.
Yeah.
Number two.
You'd have had to go to art school with him. Helped him pass a few of his exams.
I could have been a very good new model.
The hunchback is here again. Wonderful.
Extraordinarily large nose.
Yes. Oh, look, the lack of head fat.
Number two.
Yeah.
1985.
Yeah.
So I could re-experience Everton winning the league.
But you're already there.
Happy times.
You've already
been
there.
Happy place.
You already lived
through
it.
Like to go back there perpetually, every day.
Like Groundhog Day.
Yes.
I watched that movie the other
day. It'd be amazing. Honestly, that would, given the choice, I would give everything away to
re-experience. I watched that movie with my kids the other day.
With my kids.
And JJ said to me, well, at the point that he was living Groundhog Day the third time, she goes, seriously, in this movie, are we going to live the same day again and again and again and again? I go, that's sort of the point.
Yeah. Welcome to life.
Didn't really
daughter.
Translate.
Yeah, I watched Trading Places with my two older sons the other day.
Concentrated orange
juice. And I was so into it, so into it. Eddie Murphy, amazing. And after an hour, my son, who was 11, just turned to me stony faced and said, when does this movie get funny? It's like the most depressing desecration of all of my childhood memories.
Yeah.
And talking about that,
gone backwards
in
from
Westworld
3-1. Okay.
Would be 1980s Chicago, suburban Chicago, and it's John Hughes pomp. Like to go to New Trier High School, hang out with Molly Ringwald, who didn't go to New Trier High School, but I pretend she did.
Yeah.
And a young James Spader.
Yeah.
Wear some Zubas, drive a convertible Volkswagen Rabbit, and just drive around like the hot summer nights.
Yellow one.
In the northern suburbs, playing Tracy Chapman's debut album really, really loud.
You could combine all three of those. I mean, it would be very easy for you to be in the Chicago suburbs in 1985, but be an Everton fan and have some mates over back in Liverpool and go and see Everton. Do the opposite of what you did going to Chicago. You could go to Everton and re-experience it.
Yeah.
85, I believe, was the year of Back to the Future also.
Yep.
And you could live in a version of 1985 where you could get in that DeLorean and time travel back using modern technology, Rog, to go back and to live in pre-Holocaust Germany, and you could take out Hitler. You could have all of those combined. If Westworld can be real, yep. Rog,
yep.
You combining all three of your dreams, that honestly, could be just as real.
I'm not greedy. I'd settle for just the just for Everton winning the title again.
Yeah, that's definitely the most important of all of those. Really.
Talking about television,
yeah,
it's great to be on live yesterday.
Was it? Yeah, it was.
We woke up, looked at each other, uh-huh. And we're like, God, we're going to come on after Liverpool against Manchester United.
Yeah, those big one.
Those games are never 0-0.
Oh, it's going to be loads of goals.
We're on live and it all goes to crap.
Yeah.
We are back. 31st of October.
Yep.
Our Halloween special. Special.
Wonderful.
6:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Yep.
With Liverpool fan Mike Myers.
Mike Myers.
The super mensch himself, David.
Yeah. I said last night on the show when Bob Bradley came out in his uniform, now is the time on Sprockets when we dance. That was, I believe, was Mike Myers' line on SNL. Can't
may or
wait
may
to
not
see
come
him.
Up.
I met him a few years ago. He's a lovely guy.
Fantastic.
Lovely man.
Unfortunately, he's a Liverpool fan. Diehard Liverpool fan.
Okay, Rog. What is the game on Monday, October the 31st?
It's the big one. Stoke against the Sea of Swans.
Oh, it's going to be big, Rog.
It was. And NBC were looking at it like, oh, my God, we've got to put that on a Monday.
Yeah, now they're like,
now
yes!
Like, yes!
Yeah. Team coverage.
It's like the Alabama of Premier League teams.
Coverage. Woo, woo. Team coverage. Okay, Rog, we've got a packed show.
Maybe it'll be three in a booth.
Oh, I love a three-man booth,
Jam
Rog.
Three in that booth.
I know. We relive the discordant...
Let's overload the gantry.
Nil gantry. We relive the discordant 0-0 draw between Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool and Jose Mourinho's Manchester United. We stand at attention and salute Bob Bradley as the American makes his Premier League debut
El
at
Presidente.
Arsenal.
El Presidente.
And Rog will barely manage to keep his pants on if he hadn't taken them off already talking about Bob Bradley as we talk
West
about
World.
Everton's 1-1 draw at City. Plus, a togger fantasy update. We look ahead to the final day of MLS's regular season.
Final day ever?
Not the final day ever. Not unless there's something going on. I think that's not the league that's in trouble, Rog. Okay, to the football. We are now 8:38 of the way through the Premier League season. Rog, you are cracking open your Guinness, pouring it excellently with absolutely no spillage for a change. Cheers, Rog.
Oh, cheers, David. To your average weekend when Man City missed two penalties, Joe Allen scores twice, Bournemouth strike half a dozen times. And did I mention there was an American coach in the Premier League? Yeah,
weirdly you did. Okay, 8:38 to the way through the Premier League season, Rog. That reduces to 4:19. Some nuanced sleight of hand from
nuanced.
The scriptwriters this weekend as Bournemouth score a touchdown to Hull's extra point. And Liverpool and United stayed scoreless for just the second time in the Premier League era and the first time in the Men in Blazers era, I believe, Rog.
And this Premier League title race, David, couldn't be tighter.
It is tight, Rog.
With a lead, it's tight.
Yeah.
How tight is it, David?
Oh.
Very tight.
It is. It's extremely
that
tight.
That leading peloton just bunching up as we take the first turn of the course. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0, Rog. Neither team could find a way through thanks to a combination of offensive ineptitude and the magnificent David De Gea. Liverpool stay fourth, 2 points off City and Arsenal. United in seventh, Rog, just a few points behind.
Dave, how excited was the world before kickoff? I mean, this is one of the most historic rivalries in the Premier League. It's been upgraded. Two of the biggest managerial characters in world football, Jose Mourinho's Putin, Jurgen Klopp's Aubameyang. There's been so many great spectacles this season. The brilliant Spurs-Manchester City tumble. It didn't disappoint. What could possibly go wrong, right, Davo?
Yeah. Well, Robbie Musto said in the pregame that what he likes in football is he likes seeing contrasting styles go head-to-head against each other. And I think that was the assumption I made going in, Rog. Maybe you made too, that we had these contrasting styles of the Liverpool gegenpress and this just attacking flair versus Manchester United's brute strength and Mourinho, the sort of like the mastermind to try and stop another team from playing. And it would make a fantastic game. Lots of Man United players with something to prove. Lots of Liverpool players with something to prove against Man
How
United.
How wrong we were though, Dave. Because the only bright spot turned out to be Roberto Firmino's freshly scrubbed teeth. Yeah. I mean, as a spectacle, this was about as enjoyable as I imagine as it would be to have front row seats at Phil Collins' forthcoming Not Dead Yet World Tour. I mean, looking back on it, Dave, I stayed up all night trying to work out why was this so crap. And really, we shouldn't have been that surprised.
Yep.
I mean, Klopp's record against Mourinho, the Portuguese had only won one of five games. He'd often been overwhelmed by Klopp-managed teams in the past.
Yeah.
that was probably all we needed to know, Dave. And even though Liverpool had been imperious, I think they won their last four going into this game. Wijnaldum out injured, the suddenly talismanic Adam Lallana reduced to the substitutes bench with a dodgy groin. Liverpool were inevitably going to approach this game with a tentative caution. And so it proved from the off. It was just frantic, physical, combustible crap.
Yeah, Man United played very well in that first half. And they really stopped Liverpool from playing. I think Liverpool fans would say, and certainly the Liverpool players after the game, felt that they didn't execute very well, that they didn't make their passes. But I thought Man United looked physically strong. They just
out-muscled.
Yeah, they really out-muscled them all over the pitch. And Liverpool just frankly had a problem passing the ball accurately to each other. They certainly had a problem breaking forward. You can feel the crowd getting on their back every time they went sideways. They're so used to seeing this team go forward, they couldn't believe that they were watching their team go sideways.
I mean, Liverpool have become a slow starting team this season, and without Lallana, they were like the office without Steve Carell. As we've said in the past, just not able to press with such dynamism. Without Wijnaldum, they couldn't hold up that ball as they have with him in the side. And Emre Can's rusty decision-making meant they just surrendered possession repeatedly. And Mourinho, he doesn't mind the opponents having the ball. It's one of his central tenets of his philosophy, is the team with the ball is more likely to make mistakes, and it's mistakes which allow teams to score goals. He had done something fascinating in a run-up to this. He'd made Anthony Taylor, the referee, a real subject of media speculation going into the game. And then he played an intensely physical...
That's right out of the Mourinho playbook. We've seen him do this before. We've heard him do this before big games, that he makes refereeing decisions the big story so that he can go and play a very, very physically hard game.
And the poor referee couldn't give a card because he was under such scrutiny. I mean, just brilliant, cynical neutralisation of the referee. And the Herrera, emotionally, physically, so dominant. He just broke up everything that Liverpool tried. 18 combined tackles and interceptions, Premier League best this season. He was phenomenal. But the true first highlight in that brutal I saw of a first half, Dave, it was James Milner taking a throw-in.
Yeah, with gum on his bum, Rog.
Yeah, Pete James Milner, at username Carl T, summed up the first half. He said, that 45 minutes was like watching your crap show live, but marginally better. So it sums it up perfectly.
How did the gum get on his bum? I don't think we've actually even asked ourselves that question. We were so not surprised to see it there.
I imagine he'd probably been chewing it in the locker room
and
before
then he wiped
the game.
It on his bum.
Put it just in the hem of his undies. I'll take this out later.
Save that for later.
It's good. It's still minty. And then it had somehow just managed to manoeuvre around in the frantic helter-skelter.
He's a juicy fruit. He's a juicy fruit guy, Milner.
The game turned in the 60th minute. An isolated, dejected Daniel Sturridge yanked off, David. God, talk about a career.
Do you remember when
suddenly
Liverpool
reached
fans
a true crossroads?
Was screaming for Jurgen Klopp, play Sturridge. We don't understand why he's not playing Sturridge. This is why he wasn't playing Sturridge.
One touch inside the box, zero chances created, zero take-ons, zero shots. Statistics that seemed all the worse when Adam Lallana just charged on. Liverpool instantly came to life, upping the tempo. They became like little tiny, rapacious kind of hunter-gatherers, like a team of hobbit archers, Davo. And some fantastic football suddenly broke out. Chan charging through, firing low.
Yeah, very good save down to his right there by De Gea.
Fantastic, mate. Yeah. Edwin van der Sar always used to say how hard it is to play in a game for 60, 70 minutes without having to make a single save, but stay focused, stay absolutely locked into the game. He said he sweated more when he wasn't making saves than he was when the game was all played in his area. And to be able to retain your focus and then just get down so low, Davo, phenomenal. But it really was the second best save of the game, because minutes later,
Coutinho
contractually obliged long-range curler.
Fantastic shot. And I'm not sure that there's a keeper in the Premier League other than David De Gea who would have saved this. Even your boy, the big Dutch unit, Martin Stecklenburg, Roger. He's very good at penalties. But this was an absolutely amazing
save. He charged 4 feet across the face of his goal in a second while launching himself to the top corner, pounding the ball away. A ball that he had no right to get, Davo. A save that can really only be described with the adjective so Brad Guzani. It was remarkable. United suddenly holding on. I mean, their goal from this point on just to neutralise Liverpool's potency until the final whistle.
Yeah, they had that one chance. Ibrahimovic had that header, which you kind of... I'd have put money on... I think the ball came in from Pogba. And when I was watching it, I'd have put money on Ibrahimovic. Like, at least hitting that on target. He went nowhere. He sort of headed it straight back across
goal.
There
is an amazing moment. Zlatan, who we talked about, we commended him in the first couple of games, suddenly looking older than his 35 years of age, yeah. David. Goalless in five straight games now. Best chance of the game, fell onto his head. You expected him to thunder it into the back of the net. Mm. I mean, against a exceptionally
maybe
nervy
with a bicycle
carrier.
Kick.
And it's, yeah, why would he just nod it? Yeah. When he could, like, what could he have done?
Or maybe
David?
It could have been a 360 bicycle where he would have gone into, he would have faked the bicycle kick, then come back around with his head and put it
or
in.
Or kicked it onto his own head.
Yeah.
Crossed it, got it assist yeah. and the goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, but instead he nodded
how
the ball
Togger
tamely
have felt with that?
Across the face of Liverpool's yeah. goal. I mean, just terrible decision making, but it wasn't him alone. You've got to say, right now, Zlatan and Pogba, less chemistry than Seth Rogen, Catherine Hagel and Knocked Up, which is really hard to believe.
They still haven't gotten over it.
We've got to talk about Pogba, David. He evaporated, given this advanced role. I mean, on a night...
Can't complain about the role he was given.
On a night like this, which he was brought in to absolutely dominate for $110 million. But you have to say, in that second half, he looked like he was being out-bullied by Jordan Bloody Henderson.
And look, there are, as we were talking about earlier, Rog, before the pod, the English papers are full today of these sort of two extremes. The one story, which is Mourinho is killing football. He's set up to defensively nullify Liverpool and look what he did to football. And then there are a lot of people who are saying, well, wait a minute, this wasn't really Man United's fault. Liverpool failed to take advantage of what Mourinho should have been doing to them. But whatever you think, there is sort of a point that Pogba was put into this position in order to attack. He wasn't put in a defensive position. And I think Mourinho, certainly after the game, seems very disappointed in Pogba's performance. For the first time, he's not getting behind his man anymore. He is, like, criticising performance. And the fact that Pogba couldn't penetrate whatsoever, even when given open space to penetrate into, that must alarm Man United fans.
Just 63 touches all game, a season low. I mean, Pogba, to me, he looks like the guy who turns up to your pickup game in, like, the full kit. And the amazing cleats, shiny, new, beautiful cleats which you cover. And then once the whistle goes, you can't put one foot in front of the other. And he looks absolutely ineffective. You said, while we were watching the game last night, do you remember? You said Pogba ticks so many boxes for the modern footballer.
Yeah.
Apart from one.
The actual playing of the football yeah. and the scoring of the goals and the making of the assists, yeah.
Oh, at the final whistle, a draw. Good result for both clubs. Mm-hmm. A loss only for the spectator who spent 90 minutes watching that crap, Davo. Yeah. It was fascinating watching the positioning, the interviews right afterwards, because Mourinho immediately trying to play his tropes in the wake of such a match. Liverpool are not, he said, the last wonder of the world. But it all sounded a tad hollow. His team had essentially spent 90 minutes taking a crap in a swimming pool so that everyone else had to get out of the water.
Look, his team's highlight was that amazing tackle by Tony V on Firmino, Rog. That was the highlight of theirs in the entire game.
Nothing can stop me now.
And a very, very tough thing to go and watch. And of course, the papers full this morning, you and I already talking about it, about this style that Mourinho has and this shutting down of games and whether this is a strength. A lot of people are saying this was a very, very good point for Man United. This was a much better result from them. But there's a feeling with the optics, Rog, the new word that everybody's using, with the sort of 2016 optics, that somehow what we used to laud Mourinho for now is just simply not quite football.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea, Mourinho, he thrived in neutralising opponent's strengths. But in context, Davo, at United, a United hungry to dominate once again after suffering through David Moyes and LVG, two stagnant reigns back-to-back. I mean, they're United who used to delight in rolling into Anfield and just smashing their rivals in front of, like, the Liverpool faithful who were powerless to do anything about it as their heroes were destroyed. This just felt small. This felt incredibly small. And Mourinho's post-match comments, two shots on target with 65% possession. You've got to be critical of Liverpool. It's their problem. It just grated against the statistic that Man United's possession, what was it, 34-35%?
The slight difference between this United performance versus the way that he used to shut down games with Chelsea. Remember who Mourinho used to have up front, both in his 2004-05-06 era, when he had sort of Drogba, who could go and hold the ball and go and kill it, but always surrounded by smalls. whether it was like Robin with his dodgy flapper, little Duffy running around the ball. He always had smalls who could break the game down and could really play a counter game at speed on the break. Look at what he did in 2014-15. Yes, he had the muscle in defence and in the middle of the park to go and shut it all down, but he always had Hazard and Willian and Oscar and all these smalls running around, able to hit you on the counter. There was no counter-attacking threat whatsoever by Man United in this game. None. They're big, lumbering bigs, and Rashford was so isolated, like a child, out on the wing yesterday, and just no counter-attacking threat. That was the strangest thing.
Yeah, I mean, what's fascinating also, thinking about your question, why was it that in the past, Mourinho used to seem virile when he emasculated seemingly flashier opponents and just suppressed their ability to dominate the game? In the present, right now, he seemed weak last night. And in his pomp at Chelsea and then Inter, when he'd kill a game, nullify the game, smothering Barcelona along the way to the 2010 Champions League title, a classic example. Back then, results-oriented football was the order of the day. You'd say, ultimately, the result is all that matters. But the game did move, Dave. Barcelona, Bayern, Dortmund, Spain, Germany, they've all shown you can win titles and play confident, attacking football, assertive football that can make your fans' hearts soar in moments. And so the kind of anti-football that Mourinho once preached, right now it's judged far more harshly in context.
But you can win titles by not playing that kind of football, as Portugal proved at the Euros. And I know nobody lauds Portugal for it, but you
can. And no one's talked about it since.
But you can win titles still playing that kind of football. And let's not misrepresent Chelsea's title wins in 4-5, 5-6 and 14-15. They scored in 5-6 and in 14-15, they scored more goals than anybody else in the Premier League. In 4-5, they scored 72 goals. Only Arsenal scored more that season. And certainly their 73 goals they scored in 14-15 was more than anybody scored in the Premier League in 15-16. He finds a way of scoring goals with his team as he locks down teams as well, but not in the big matches. And this is the way that Mourinho has always played big matches, and it's the way he's going to continue to. And, you know, football might not like it. I wonder how Man United fans feel, though.
I think a lot of them are incredibly confused. Manchester United, they are a swashbuckling kind of team based around bravado, not based on fear first and fear of conceding. But when you look at United's schedule right now, coming off that lacklustre draw with Stoke, heading into the complete and utter narrative overload of Mourinho's return to Chelsea, with a League Cup clash against Manchester City thrown in. Just a loss here. A loss here for Manchester United. It just would have put almost too much weight, Dave, too much scrutiny, too much pressure. I mean, more than we can bear on Jose's shoulders as he headed up to Stamford Bridge. That's why. Why
it was
did
a good
we,
result.
Why did we expect anything different?
Yeah,
this was a game he didn't need to win. But there's no way. There's no way he could have lost this game without paying a terrible personal professional price as they journey to Stamford Bridge. But you've got to say, in a tight Premier League title race,
so tight,
in which City, Arsenal, Spurs, Liverpool just cheek and jowl in the top four, Manchester United 5 points off the pace in seventh place. I mean, ultimately, if I was a United fan, with my expectations of Zlatan and Pogba and Mkhitaryan and everybody coming into this season, not so good.
But you might also, the glass half full though, Rog, is that these players are still going to come good. At some point, they're going to go and explode. And it's not like Man City aren't starting to have their problems. And I think we saw some of, weakness is the wrong word, but we saw some of the challenges that Jurgen Klopp is going to face at Liverpool. When it comes down to it, if you can, you know, Coutinho, other than that one amazing shot, Coutinho was quite quiet during this game. Yes, he's coming off, you know, traveling over the international break, two games against Bolivia and Venezuela. You know, he can't feel that fresh, but this is a team that until they get someone up front who's going to consistently put the ball in the back of the net, Rog, you can see how teams can shut them down.
Yeah, Liverpool, finally, the first clean sheet of the season, cause for a frustrated Jurgen Klopp to mutter, yippee, ironically, post-match. I think he was frustrated. His players, they definitely lacked the precision to take advantage of the bounty of possession they had, especially in that second half. Yeah, big picture, Davo. 8 points harvested from games against Arsenal, Tottenham Hotspur, Chelsea, and now United. I think most Liverpool fans would have taken that at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's the 0 points against Burnley that will be harder for them to deal with. Rog, it's going to be a long season. Okay, Rog, moving on. One of the teams we could make a very strong argument for, Arsenal 3.
Swansea. Are you talking about for the title?
America. The United States of America,
yes.
Rog. 2.
Manifest destiny.
Football's equivalent of the Battle of Bunker Hill, Rog, if the Welsh had been involved. Technically an American defeat, but a refusal to capitulate without a fight raised some eyebrows. In the end, a Theo Walcott brace and a Mesut Ozil blast proved too much for Bob Bradley's Swans at the Emirates. Arsenal go second, Swansea drop to 19th.
I'm sure the Welsh were involved, just even if it was just rooting for the Americans back then, Dave. But as I said on the show,
the Germans.
Oh, America. You save Europe's ass in the Second World War. You put a man on the moon, but you've done something now even more incredible, let's be honest. You've birthed a Premier League football manager of your very own. I think the 22nd nationality to join the ranks of the Premier League, which has now had almost as many great American managers as it has English ones, Davo. At Ran Holman tweeted us to say, if your faith in American leadership has eroded in recent months, watch Bob Bradley. He will restore it. Oh, God, I hope that's right, Davo. I've got to say, in the run-up to this game, I just found it fascinating watching the press conferences. Almost every single question from every single journalist was a variation on, do you know what you are doing? And are you out of your depth? And do you think you're qualified to be a Premier League manager? I mean, how many managers have been asked to their face in press conferences if, were you impressed by the technical level of your players? Or, have you ever met Arsene Wenger before? I mean, all these questions are all just, can you believe you're a bloody Premier League manager, you American hick, you? And Bob, being such a great bloke, such a candid bloke, he's just taken every single question on face value and talked about it for a long, long time. Longer than any Premier League manager that I've ever heard answer any question before, David.
Yeah, I think his performance in the press conferences has been very impressive. And I think some of the questions he's been asked by some journalists have been awful. There are a lot of journalists, I think, also in the sort of, you know, larger newspapers who have done a very good job covering it and have been very, very fair to him. And I think a lot of the worst reception for him has been from fans of Swansea City themselves, and let's hope Bob
shoves it down their mouths. Definitely Rush. Getting behind him. I have enjoyed English journalists' first kind of impressions of Bob. We are so used to him in America, but watching him on a global stage with his intensity and precision, and they're trying to digest and understand him. They've compared him to a Navy SEAL sergeant, which I'm guessing you'll like. A lot of them are marvelling at just how proper hard that he seems, Davo, on the sideline, which I love. But watching him walk onto that sideline during the team handshakes, and he just breathed deeply, took a moment to take it all in. It was beautiful. 35 years as a coach, 35 years of a man with a huge dream, which I'd love to know, did he believe in that dream when he coached at Ohio and at Princeton? Was that always his goal? I'm sure it probably was, and I'm looking forward to getting the chance to ask him. But just as if he had a sense of the history he was making, just for a moment before the whistle kicked off, and was fully aware that this was the greatest day for Bulls in Swansea since John Joe Shelby upped and left town. But I also felt a terrible terror, David. A terror that I feel a lot before the first whistle. That our hero had been thrown into this crucible, facing Arsene Wenger with his 1,130 Premier League games. And that there was a thrashing. There was a darkness. There was just the honeymoon was just going to come to a grinding halt. But before the whistle went, David, that big tactical question we debated with Arlo White last week, we soon got our answer. We talked about how would Bob Bradley kind of measure up his sideline fashion game now he's landed in the big time. You weren't impressed.
I'm not sure we did get our answer, Rog. I think we're sort of in Bob Bradley wardrobe purgatory with the all black outfit with the dress shoes. I think he decided to go in with sort of a blank palette.
Yes.
And then he's going to build on it on a weekly basis. We know he's going to wear dark colours. I think it's the only thing we know.
He does look good in dark colours.
Yeah, he does look good in dark colours.
You should stay away from browns and yellows.
Yeah, but the
just keep it simple, you mean?
The dress shoes with that outfit was a little...
You can't mix the long kind of mock turtle with the formal dress shoes. That was a big no-no. JW just called the outfit perhaps the biggest day for the Joma brand in the United States.
Yeah, it was a bit normcore. He's a follower of normcore.
At Julian Starler tweeted us, Coach Bradley looking like a sporty Steve Jobs. Many of you disappointed by his cosplay. A lot of you suggested that he just go full on commit to that kind of goth look, go with some eyeliner full on. I'd love that, actually. Or wear a cloak. That would be amazing. But the majority of you, just hoping for something that was far more American, Davo, you know, embrace the red, white and blue. Dress like Evel Knievel. You know, but don't be ashamed. Apollo Creed's wardrobe, read it.
Yeah, but if you've ever seen Bob Bradley on the sidelines before, I don't think you're surprised that he went for something a little bit more discreet, Rog, and that would sort of have him fade into the background.
I doubt Bob's listening to the podcast. He's got better things to do. There's Bruce Springsteen CDs don't listen to themselves. But if you are listening, just either go full on native, Bob, for the next game. I mean, they make some of the most stunning coloured herringbone Welsh tweeds down there. Just absolutely exquisite. Or go subtle balls out, America, mate. You don't have to kind of like go Bill Belichick. You just take the sideline against Watford wearing only a wife beater and a gold chain and some tight camo cargo pants. I think that's just winning.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to do it, Rog. Anyway, Arsenal started the game.
An actual
football match occurred, which is something that Bob Bradley, you know, I think wants to happen. He wants the football to start. Less speculation, Rog. Started, and poor Arsenal early, looking very, very good on the ball, and Swansea looking a little weak at the back.
Yeah, Arsenal clearly sent out with instructions to go for Swansea's throat right from the outset. Iwobi, Ozil, Sanchez moving, thinking, passing. And you have to say, among all the kind of worst possible start scenarios, going 2-0 down within 33 minutes, yeah. David, probably way up there.
Yeah, probably not the best way. Theo Walcott with
twice.
The first goal. Yeah, Theo Walcott first, in the first goal. How often do you get to say Theo Walcott out-muscling a Swansea defender or an opposition defender, Rog? The second goal, a little bit prettier, but not pretty if you're Jack Cork, Rog.
Yeah, both goals just jump cuts of defensive switch-offs. I mean, Theo could probably not believe the amount of time he had in the six-yard box to just nip in, finish from close range, left alone, said on the show, more wide open than Drake and Rihanna's relationship. Mm-hmm. He scored five goals, Dave O'Thea, in eight Premier League games this season. In truth, he could have had five in this game alone.
Look, a player who has come in for a fair amount of criticism on this podcast over the years, we've got to give some credit to Theo Walcott. He's had an amazing start to this season, scoring goals. And I think his performances are going to be very, very crucial for Arsenal as the season continues. But then, Rog, just before halftime, perhaps a little bit of overconfidence, certainly a bit of overplaying the ball from Granit Xhaka just outside his area, Rog. And Gylfi Sigurdsson nips in, gets one back.
Yeah, lifeline for Swansea. His left foot absolutely lethal, lashing the ball home. The first goal of the Bob Bradley era, scored by Sigurdsson, who is the new Bradley son. At GBayu tweeted us that probably at halftime that defensive first half performance meant that Ricardo Clark was looking for direct flights to Wales, spelt W-H-A-L-E-S, on kayak. The second half was a fairly sloppy affair, both teams conceding possession in turn. Arsenal, probably because of over-elaboration. Swansea, just because they were poor and able to create any options going forward, just ceding possession repeatedly on the edge of their area like danger-loving masochists. And the game did seem over, Davo, when Ozil, stunning act of unbelievable poetic violence.
Yeah, great volley from the ball. Alexis Sanchez, fantastic little lob wedge he hit to him.
It's like one of those passes from a quarterback to like Julio Jones where they lob it into the corner of the end zone where only the giant wide receiver can catch it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was for Ozil, it was an exclamation point on what was probably his best game of the season. But Swansea wouldn't give up. I imagined Alexi Lalas watching the game at home in his own Evel Knievel outfit, just saying this was the most American of performances. Because what Swansea lacked in quality, they made up with in heart. Mo Barrow, the Gambian, just kept charging forward, set up Borja to spank the ball through Czech. Xhaka, I don't know what happened there.
So it's
David.
3-2 now, and then Xhaka gets sent off for, I mean, perhaps the red card was a little harsh, but it was a stupid foul. And by the way, this is a guy who has a pretty terrible record.
Eighth
in terms
red
of getting sent
in two
off.
And a half years. If you didn't see it, it was a professional foul very close to the halfway line. The referee went red. Wenger, after the game, went all Pantone on the journalist. He said, it was a dark yellow, but the referee went for a bright red. Which, I mean, technically, a dark yellow is coquelot, the poppy flower's orange-tinted red colour. Mm-hmm. And when I started to look this stuff up in Pantone, I went down a real Pantone wormhole. Do you know they've got a colour called Wenger?
Huh, really?
In Pantone, without the R.
Huh.
It's the sludge brown of 70% of the things you can buy at West Elm. Wow. So suddenly Arsenal, 10 men, hanging on, Mustafi floundering, Barrow running with cunning, the defence buckling, chance after chance.
Yeah, it happens a lot in the Premier League, where the lower-ranked teams against the higher-ranked teams, and if they hold on and get close somewhere towards the end, you know, the bigger teams start to panic a little bit, and you saw a bit of panic. You definitely saw a bit of panic, and Swansea fought to the very end, and, you know, something, maybe a lot, maybe somewhere between something and a lot for Bob Bradley to take out of his team's performance.
I hope you're happy, Arsenal fans, beating Sir Bob Bradley. Don't know how you can live with yourselves, honestly, from my perspective. But we've got to talk about the performance. I mean, Swansea now, I think the enormity of the task at hand is very evident. Swansea played in that first half like a team who have now lost six games, drawn one, and not won since the first game of the season. They've got good intent, as they did have in their last game against Liverpool, but gutsy performances are going to get you only so far, and they will get credit from this performance because, frankly, at 2-0 down, they could have just imploded. It could have been a complete and utter beat-down embarrassment. But the squad is, it just lacks quality, Davo. I mean, the Tasker, he's going to make a great meal out of a refrigerator that just has kind of like odds and sods in there, leftovers, sour milk, box of tofu of unknown providence. He's got to whip up something that's absolutely fantastic, and he's got to do it quickly.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I do hope that it is the influence of Bob Bradley that did get those players playing with that grit and heart and determination in this game. Like, let's hope that it was the effect of the new manager coming in. But let's take Bob Bradley out of the equation. Let's think about how we'd be analysing this game if Bob Bradley weren't there. We'd probably be saying Swansea got outplayed. The score doesn't really represent what happened during the game. And analysing Swansea's chances, it's going to be football that's going to take them out of the relegation zone. It's not going to be heart and grit and determination. And it's going to be football. Giffey Sigurdsson, his best player on the pitch, is going to have to carry this team on his shoulders throughout the rest of the season. The defence is going to have to be shorn up. They are losing Ashley Williams, Rog, to Everton has really, really hurt. Everton fans, I hope you're happy. It is a very, very tough thing. He was a fantastic defender for that team. Fabianski, you know, not a fantastic game for him.
He's no Bill Hamid.
This weekend. And it's going to be football that's going to have to get them out, and then it's going to have to be tactically and football-wise. And a lot of those players are going to have to step up big time. And I think the January transfer window and what the American ownership do for Bob Bradley in January is going to be key.
Paging Oguchi on Yewu.
Yep, he will answer on the first page.
The bad news, Swansea in the bottom three now. Good news. I mean, Bob would have probably had two training sessions with the full first team squad back from international duty. He's going to have a full week to get this team ready. Gilfy did say to the press, one of the tropes of kind of new managers, he said the boys really like the new manager. Training has become really sharp since he came in. And while no one expected Swansea to beat Arsenal, there's just going to be no room for error going forward. They're in a brutally desperate fight for points, this team. They've got to conjure some way, any which way, to get at least 3 points from the next two games against Watford and Stoke, or else the Bob Bradley honeymoon, it's going to be shorter than the Samsung Note 7 shelf life. Yeah. From an Arsenal perspective, David.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal got the win. It's what potential champions do. They get the win. They got a little bit stressed and tested at the end. But look, they are offensively majestic, Rog. It's what happens to them at the back. And that overplaying at 2-0 up, that overplaying outside the box, which just seems to be a just something we see from Arsenal again and again and again against the big teams. And remember, it's Arsenal's results against the big teams which are ultimately going to decide how the big teams play against each other will ultimately decide this Premier League race. And that's stuff that they can't do in those games.
Second straight week, they've struggled but ultimately overcome mediocre, tenacious opponents. Last season, it was games like this they actually would have drawn or found a way somehow to lose. Now they've had 6 wins on the bounce in this campaign. They nestle into second place. Few teams, Davo, nestle into second place with the overwhelming emotional thump of hope and dread than Arsenal Football Club.
Okay, Rog, Man City 1, Everton 1. The Martin Stecklenburg show, Rog. Man City 1, not 3, Everton 1. The Martin Stecklenburg show. The Dutchman used every bit of his 6'6" frame. He looks bigger to repeatedly repel City. His 2 penalties, stops, and an amazing save from Kevin, 10 minutes from time, earn Everton a point at the Etihad. City managed to stay top on goal difference. Everton a sixth, Rog.
Fascinating tactical battle between two managers who were roommates at Barcelona, which is where their understanding of the game was truly forged. And Everton took on Man City, who, you know, stumbling. Celtic, then Spurs, had pressed Manchester City's back four into buckling in consecutive games. A new system unveiled here. Three at the back for Pep, empowering his team to completely overrun the Everton midfield. Fernandinho, Gundogan, so dominant, just charging at will at the whiplashed Oviedo, whose fear you could smell 3,000 miles away thanks to HD television. And for the first 30 minutes, Everton just absolutely pinned back. Their dominance, not a case of Everton playing badly. City just so many weapons going forward.
And Everton just unable to hold on to the ball in the middle
not
of the park.
Not sure who to press, that you know, David.
Yeah, very, very difficult when Man City are in that kind of a mood.
And the dam broke in the 42nd minute. Oh, Jags. I've got to say, Jags gave away two penalties in this game. But he and Williams, 24 clearances between them in the heart of that defence. This game could have been, should have been arguably so much worse. But it was his trailing leg that brought down the tiny David Silva, who popped up, the Ginger King.
Yeah, Kevin. Aguero on the bench. Aguero, the regular penalty taker, not available to take it. Kevin takes it. Kevin thinks, okay, I'll test the big Dutch unit off to the left. I'll put a sky on the ball. He's bound to go low, and just puts it. It looked like the easiest save of all time for Martin Stecklenburg.
Yeah, and given a lifeline, Everton took advantage. They swapped Gerry D for James McCarthy, moved to a diamond midfield four to get some traction in the middle of the park, began to mount tentative forays, and it was one of them that became a classic counter.
Yeah, Ghana with that actually fantastic long ball into the middle of the park. Bolasie actually skins John Stones. It was a fantastic flick.
Which should have made the ensuing goal count double in my book.
Ball breaks to Romelu Lukaku. When he is charging forwards with the ball at his feet on the way to goal, there's no one like him. He is thunderous, Rog.
It does remind me of watching Earl Campbell charge across the Houston Astrodome in his Hall of Fame pomp, Dave. And he finished this one so clinically. City continued to press. Jagielka continued to give away penalties.
Yeah, another penalty. This time Aguero's on as a sub now. Aguero, now it's going to be okay. Don't
worry,
panic, lads.
Aguero's on.
He's going to go and
do
it.
He refers to himself.
Yeah, what am I going to go and do? Am I going to go and put it in a different place? Or should I put it in there? He'll never think I'm going to put it in the same place. He'll never going to think I'm going to put it there. And he'll never be able to save it again if I do. He stutters on the step up, puts it in exactly the same location as Kevin put his penalty. Two penalty saves in the game, Rog.
Yeah, first Everton goalkeeper to do that in 95 years. I remember the last time. It's fantastic.
Including in a penalty shootout, Rog.
And Aguero, since March, 7 out of 12 penalties. A fascinating flaw in his AI structure that
maybe
must be now reprogrammed.
Not be the regular penalty taker, Rog.
Oh, they need to sign James Milner back.
No, just let Claudio Bravo take the penalties.
He's very good with his feet. Yeah. As I said on the show, these are more than just saves. They were just a rational, logical case sent only to me that I need to go immediately to the nearest tattoo parlour and have the name Stecklenburg tattooed in bubble writing above my bum as a tramp stamp.
Yeah. Maybe not.
You think? It's too late, mate.
I don't think.
It's too late.
I don't think Mrs. B would approve of that, Rog.
She loves Steck as much as I do.
Not that much.
Just when I was trying to get the money together, Dave, out of my little change purse that I've got near the television to go and get aforementioned tramp stamp, there was an attempt on goal that even the Steck couldn't save.
Yeah, well, it was just 2 minutes after the penalty save. David Silva, what a ball, Rog. What a ball into Nolito. Nolito, great header, great finish. I love a winger who can get into the centre of the box and finish with his head. And it's 1-1.
But what shocked me was that City conjured so little in the wake. They should have closed that game out. They should have been professional. They should have been lethal. Everton were there for the taking. 13 corners to 1. 72% Manchester City possession. Aside from the one thumping De Bruyne drive, which arced towards the corner of the net, only for Stecklenburg to again dive like a Cape Crusader. They created very little. Note on Steck, Everton fans really beginning to question him this season. He was signed as a backup, surprised many by becoming first choice, started strongly but just lacked confidence in recent weeks. This was the game of his life. Like the Belgian World Cup game was Timmy Howard's game of his life. unfortunately, I just don't think a world-class goalkeeper makes him.
And I think for Man City, they've got to be looking at that, thinking, how did we not win this game? How do we not have 3 points? But a little bit of probably, woe is me, we're so unfortunate, we're so unlucky, settling in.
And the result wobble continues, man.
Yeah,
third consecutive game without a win. Despite all Pep's protestations to the contrary, I think the reality of the brutal competition that is the Premier League, it's dawning. I say from an Everton perspective, Koeman's team showed spine, courage, refusal to wilt. He's now made the joint best start to the Premier League season by an Everton manager, which is impressive, until you realise the other one that he's now equal with is Bobby Martinez. Yet, I found his comments after the game fascinating. He just marvelled at what Guardiola is building in Manchester. He said, City are the best team in my career that I've ever played against. Really high top-level football, high tempo, high pressing. We just made mistake after mistake because their pressing was so high. Great words for Pep as he heads off to the new camp for back-to-back Champions League games against Barcelona. His urtext, the club that when you think about it, still coats his DNA and oozes out of every one of his beautiful bald paws.
Okay, Chelsea 3, Leicester 0. The battle of the last two champions sees Antonio Conte's side deliver a comprehensive victory over listless Leicester, Rog. Goals from Diego Costa, Eden Hazard and Victor Moses moved Chelsea into fifth. They're 3 points off City and Arsenal.
Odd week for Chelsea. Flurry of rumours emerged all week that Conte was going to be sacked.
Yeah, bookmakers not taking any more bets on it, Rog.
And it ended with a beautiful performance, possibly the best of the season. A dominant feel-good victory with a new 3-4-3 formation. Victory never in doubt. I mean, Leicester, I thought you would have been furious at them before kickoff. That huge tactical mistake.
What, wearing red?
A blue team.
You're a blue team playing in red. I don't like it, Rog. And it was like a colour rush red. It wasn't just like, oh, we'll wear a little bit of red. They just wore red.
They taunted the soccer gods. And their difficult second album now totally continues, David.
Well, also, not playing Mahrez and Slimani, also perhaps a even larger thing, resting them for the Champions League. Might have been a bigger error.
Champions of England, you're having a laugh, chanted memory challenge Chelsea fans. Proof of Premier League history repeats itself, first as tragedy, then as farce, Davo. I've got
actually quite a good memory, Rog, because that was screamed at them all last season.
Lovely moments. Diego Costa, seventh goal of the season, an exquisite flick by Nathaniel Chalaba, which he must have learned during his 101 games in exile on loan on assorted nefarious clubs.
That'll be useful for his next 100 games on loan, Rog.
I loved watching this game, Davo. So many great Chelsea performances. I mean, Costa, Hazard, Alonso, improving Matic.
Yeah, that was his home debut.
But was this a case of Chelsea being good or just Leicester being, oh my lord, bad?
It doesn't really matter either way. It was just so enjoyable to watch Chelsea playing without Branislav Ivanovic. It was just like, it was so liberating. And look, this reminds me of old school Chelsea. This does remind me of Ranieri Chelsea, Rog, when we played stylish football. But ultimately, when it came down to the end of the season, we were always like fifth or sixth. We just weren't quite good enough. But it's entertaining. It's nice after years of playing sometimes dominant but very physically attritional football. It's nice to see these players so released. It was beautiful to watch. And that's been something which has been very, very rare over the past few years. Interesting, you know, David Luiz, a decision to sign him, like, very much questioned. And obviously we played some comedy highlights on Men in Blazers yesterday. But him, a very, very different defender at the, you know, tip of a back three than he is in the sort of, as one of two central defenders in a back four. And if he can keep up this style in the Premier League, if he can, it's something very, very different than a lot of these other teams have to go and face. I think Arsenal is where he tested it first. It's almost the worst team to go and play that against. But it's going to be very interesting to see how other teams go and deal with it, starting with Manchester United at the weekend.
Oh, zero shots on target the entire game for Leicester City. Courtney Love, Gary Boussy, Leicester City's title defence. I mean, you've got to wonder what Vardy and Mahrez are thinking, whether they wish they'd gone to Arsenal after all. At MCassin11 tweeted us to say, Leicester City, the Ken Bone of the English Premier League. Ranieri talking about how they're so focused on the Champions League, it's made the Premier League difficult. But you've got to say, watching Leicester so poor this season, to me, it only makes all that we witnessed with our own eyes last year just all the more magical.
Well, and also watching Conte, definitely a tactician, not give Vardy the space over the top. So he sits that back three behind. So there's no space for them behind the Chelsea defence. It just feels like, oh my God, why didn't everybody play against Leicester this way last season? There was so much naivety and probably arrogance from the opposition, from the opposing teams last season. The one other thing I'll say about this game, you know, and this is a nice football thing, Victor Moses, Rog, this is a player who has certainly earned his break at Chelsea. I remember when he played, I was there the day, he played for Wigan against Chelsea. I think he was only 19 years old, Rog, and he was just fantastic that game. Got signed at Chelsea shortly afterwards. It feels like he's been around football for years. He's only 25 years old. He can still do amazing tumbling routines after scoring, Rog. Very good to see Victor Moses get his chance.
He's been to Conte as Raheem Sterling has been to Pep, David.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Playable.
West Brom 1, Tottenham 1. Such a surprising result. Spurs drop points at Poulsenville. A goal from former Spurs man Nasser Chadli actually put the Baggies up in the 82nd minute. But a composed Dele Alli finish, you know, a finish that was disguised as a crap goal, Rog, but it's actually amazing. Rescued a draw for Mauricio Pochettino's men at the Hawthorns. Spurs slipped to third.
Oh, yeah, not a surprise, though, when you look at it. I mean, yes, there's a sense of anticlimax. Their systemic destruction of Manchester City raised hopes to ecstatic levels. But, I mean, despite the lofty ambition, Spurs, they always struggle against Pulis, robust, pragmatic, kind of break us down emphasis. They didn't win either game last season, including that 1-1 draw in April, which kind of killed off their title ambitions. Once again, from the opening whistle, West Brom dropped 10 deep, dared Spurs in their bold away kit, nude bodysuits to come at us.
That was a horrible away kit.
I loved watching Vincent Janssen. Really led the line, didn't score, but his hold-up play did cause all kinds of problems for a West Brom defence, creating space for Lamella and Dele to run into and force the sprightly Ben Foster into a remarkable... Wow, he's getting old. The older he gets, the better he gets.
Mm.
8 saves. And last week, Dave, we talked about with Arlo that the true test of Spurs would be if if one of them is injured.
Yeah.
My God, curse of Rog. What happens in this game?
Well, Alderweireld got carted off, Rog.
Yeah. God, I felt terrible there. I felt guilty even though he actually tripped on Vertonghen. So I was nothing to do with it.
Even more curse of Rog.
But he was stretchered off. Spurs fans, God love him. So relieved to see him up and about on Sunday in a video playing Call of Duty with his teammates. In the short term, Alderweireld's health probably more important to the club than their new stadium.
Mm.
But who was it who opened the scoring? Always the ex.
One of the players who was widely derided, Rog, during his time at Tottenham. Nasser Chadli, Rog, the best footballer on West Bromwich Albion, by the way, by about 50 miles. He pops up.
Fourth Premier League goal in 5 matches. A Chadli, my kingdom for a Chadli. Credit Spurs, because they did manage to level things. And it was Dele.
Oh, my word. And at first blush, Rog, just looked like an all-star crap goal, Rog. Might make our crap goals highlight reel at the end of the season. But when we watch the replay, you realise he stuck it in deliberately. Oh. An Englishman deliberately using the outside of his foot. And actually it hits the outside of his boot and goes where he wants it to go.
Yeah, before the game, Pochettino had said Tottenham are entering a 7-game, 23-day crucible that would define their season. I think they'll be happy and relieved to get out the Hawthorns with a point. They're still unbeaten, a feat which 8 games into the season they haven't done since 1990. A brutal gauntlet of games now await. Champions League home and away against Bayer Leverkusen. League Cup rumble at Liverpool. Games against Bournemouth, Leicester. And oh yes, Arsenal Football Club before the next international break.
Oh, I can't wait for that one. But based on the evidence of this weekend's big game, perhaps I should wait for that one, Rog. Okay, Crystal Palace 0, West Ham 1. Poor tetchy London derby.
The Alan Pardew derby.
19th minute finish from Manuel Lanzini.
Oh,
what a goal.
Beautiful.
Proved the difference in South London. The win stops the bleeding for the Irons, who earned just their second win of the season.
Yeah, miracle win for West Ham, inspired by Slaven Bilic's new hair. A tonsorial miracle.
He's done something.
It's so fresh and new. Andrew Kelly emailed us to suggest that his hair should come with its own hair asterisk. But you could see how that just inspired his team. If the gaffer can do that,
yeah,
we can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like play football.
Yeah.
And play football they did. Fantastic finish from Lanzini,
yeah,
at the attacking end. This new system playing 3 at the back, which allowed him and Payet to focus on the attacking end. of the field, but the 3 points in truth secured by another miracle, the Benteke penalty miss.
Yeah, Jonathan Benteke's brother, Rog.
What's his name?
I don't know. I have no idea. The other Benteke, the one that cost more than 30 million.
Junior Rog. Or senior.
Yeah, something. He steps up to take the penalty. For some reason, leans back on his way in. Why don't people just step up and thump it? Leans back. At first, it looked like it just gone over the bar, but it was one of those very rare, the sort of the double whammy, Rog, both wide and too high, Rog. Quite difficult to do that.
West Ham survived a harsh red card to Ipswich Town's Aaron Cresswell.
Yes.
I mean, both yellows, incredibly dodgy. Down the stretch with 10 men, Adrian, huge saves when needed, and a massive win for Bilic.
Very, very good result for West Ham. Palace kills a little bit of their momentum. Stoke 2, Sunderland 0, Rod. Stoke, they're the next opponent but one for America's new favourite team, Swansea. Rod, a first half Joe Allen double gives the Potters their first win of the season. Sunderland, meanwhile, become only the second team in top flight history to fail to win any of their opening 8 league games in consecutive seasons. You'll know, Rog, the last team to do so, Bury, in 1905-1906.
I'm sorry to all the American fans of Bury that were bringing back that awful memory. Yeah. 4 goals in 3 games for Joe Bloody Allen. Looks more and more like a young Kenny Loggins. Slightly worrying for Sunderland's American fans. Lyndon Gooch praying for a call-up to the US 23 for the squad against Mexico. Not getting any playing time despite Sunderland's brutal run.
Yeah. I don't know what David Moyes is thinking, Rod, their Spanish manager. Southampton 3, Burnley 1. The Saints' clandestine climb up the table continues. We've seen this before. 2 goals from Chaz Austin and 1 from Nathan Redmond. Nobody was more surprised than Nathan Redmond, Rog. Extends Southampton's unbeaten streak to 4 games and sends Burnley packing in their mostly owned, occasionally leased, David Fishwick minibuses.
Fantastic run. What a well-run football club Southampton are. I mean, every time they lose a head, like a footballing hydra, a new young talent grows in its place. They lost Ryan Bertrand and Matt Target in this game, and without them, they're going to be tested for real, because in over the next 5 weeks, the Saints face Manchester City, Chelsea and Liverpool. We'll see how they stand in the wake of that run.
Absolutely. Middlesbrough 0, Watford 1, Rog, 54th minute. Thunderstrike from Billy Zane's favourite Premier League player, Jose Holobas, hands the Hornets all 3 points at the Riverside Stadium. Bournemouth 6, Hull City 1. Mike Phelan's terrible, terrible, no good, very bad day, roughly 48 hours after signing a 1-year deal as the Tigers' permanent manager. Phelan watches the Cherries pump 6 past his side. Hull have just 1 point from their last 6 games. Their goal difference during that time, negative 15.
First time the Cherries have scored 6 goals in a Premier League game. Won't be the last. The way Hull City defended set pieces, it's going to happen many times, I imagine, before the season. That should not take away from Bournemouth's day. What a fantastic team. What a fantastic performance. I mean, we forget, when you look at the players, the back four, where they've come from, the core of that midfield, battle-hardened during that club's climb from football's nether region, still playing before just 11,000 fans. I think Manchester United have more corporate dinners than Bournemouth can fit into their stadium. Just, it's a wonder what Eddie Howe is conjuring, and that unique team culture that he's galvanised. He calls his club a learning culture, and he demands that all of his players keep developing themselves mentally and tactically. We should never, never take what he's done for granted.
Okay, time now for our Togger fantasy football update. That Bournemouth result did not help my Togger fantasy team, Rog. I started goalkeeper Eldin Yakupovic last weekend. However, it didn't hurt me that much either, because fortunately he didn't play. 0 points for a Devo goalkeeper in Togger is actually a pretty good result.
One of your top scorers. Yeah. It's a terrible scoring day all round, with Kun Aguero, Zlatan, Rashford, Benteke, Firmino, all of them busts. Who would have thought that Joe Allen, Stanislas, Billy Zane's favourite player, Holobas, would get around 30 points? Just unpredictable chaos is reigning, Dave. I'm going to start picking Gary Cahill and Nacho Monreal. It's my new strategy.
Yeah, however, Rog, last week's winner, Defying Klinsmann, smashed it. His 212.25 points were almost 40 more than anyone else, thanks to his ever-predictable fantasy trio of Jose Holabas, Joe Allen, and Junior Stanislas, Rog, to join our league. Well, what a performance.
By the way, you Jürgen, know what? That well is done, so mate. Impressive. I think it is the real Jürgen.
It could be.
It's good. He's got a good... He's, it could people be. People say, you know, he doesn't understand tactics.
Come on, Junior, Joe, Jose. They're all J names. He loves that. To join our league, just download
smart
the Togger
to pick
app
John Stones
on your phone. Select your perfect 11. You'll be all set for next week's game.
And win Rog. One of our beautiful new patches.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Rog, MLS. The final weekend of Major League Soccer's regular season is upon us. Not ever, Rog, not ever. A lot to play for Sunday with every single MLS game kicking off at 4 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, with the final day of the season. Dallas leading the West, heading to Los Angeles to try and lock up the Supporters' Shield, the regular season trophy. Despite brutal loss, star midfielder Diaz out with a season-ending Achilles injury. In the East, it's all pretty sorted. Philadelphia Union look to have locked up the final playoff spot despite just a late season implosion going winless down the stretch. I imagine many MLS are just putting their hands together and praying for an epic Red Bulls NYCFC clash which could take the playoffs certainly to the next level. But the big last day storyline revolves around the golden boot, NYCFC's 22 goal hero David Villa. Remarkable DP who genuinely seems to live and die with his team's wins
amazing,
and losses.
Rog.
Yeah, in stark contrast to, let's say, Didier Drogba. But I digress. And the current top goal scorer, Bradley Wright Phillips. What a remarkable bloke he is. Currently 23 goals. I mean, what a season for Manchester City Southampton reject, who's gone on to become, I believe, one of the greatest MLS goal scorers in the league's history.
And a player who grew up in the shadow of his brother, Sean Wright Phillips, Rog, but now with what he's doing in MLS, just amazing, amazing, amazing stuff.
In other big American soccer news, FIFA Council agreed that European and Asian members can't bid again for the World Cup after Russia and Qatar have the next two tournaments. That has changed the landscape of the 2026 contest a little bit, said US Soccer Federation honcho Sunil Gulati with a smile. And smiley should do, Davo. Essentially, what this news means, hold yourself back here. The US are going to get the 2026 World Cup, either alone or in a joint bid with Canada and Mexico, because FIFA now loves co-hosting. You're able to get more bribes from more countries. Shut your eyes, though, Davo. Just think about Pulisic, Jordan Morris, Lyndon Gooch, Jack Harrison, and Wando all lifting the World Cup trophy, Davo, on American soil.
That'll be amazing, Rog. That will probably be, talking of bribes and corruption, a 212-team World Cup by the time that Gianni Infantino is done.
And we'll beat them all!
Yes, exactly. Everybody will play. We'll have other planets playing. All from different times and ages. The winner of the coveted
from
Guinness
the future.
Men in Blazers, poet, philosopher, soccer scribe, Raven of the Week is Guyan Randall. Dear Rog, an article in this week's Economist. Ooh. Serious reading. Made me think of you. It is called Against Happiness. Companies that try to turn happiness into a management tool are overstepping the mark. It is about companies like Zappos, Virgin Airlines, and Pret A Manger, which expect their staffs to be in a state of barely controlled delirium. You should go to the Pret A Manger up the street in Hudson. That is not doesn't apply there. Or Google.
That's why I love that one the most.
That is not. They are not in a state of barely controlled delirium.
Being honest.
Yeah.
It's crap
or Google,
to sell sandwiches
which until
to people
recently
like me.
Had an in-house. But they're very good sandwiches, Rog, before the lawyers at Pret A Manger write us a letter.
Lots of sandwiches.
Or
are
Google,
available.
Which until recently had an in-house jolly good fellow to spread mindfulness and empathy.
What?
They had apparently. Like a court jester, what? A jolly good fellow.
I wondered where Tim Sher would have gone.
Who walked around spreading mindfulness and empathy. That wouldn't even put me in a good mood. Oh my God, Rog, awful. The article begins, Lord Percy of Newcastle, Britain's Minister of Education in 1924 to 1929, I think I went to university with one of his descendants, was no fan of the fad
for happy, clappy, progressive education happy that clappy. Spread among the country's schools on his watch. He declared that it was all nonsense. A child ought to be brought up to expect unhappiness. Is that my father or Lord Percy of Newcastle? Based on what you've shared on the pod, the unhappiness in the schools, at least in Liverpool, oh no, also in Southeast London, continued on for many decades. Do you believe it is an important quality that has made you the men you are? Interesting, because for me, watching Gary Cahill this season has just been depressing. Well, yeah, for me too.
It's a leading question.
Yeah.
I suggest you listen to the last 7 years of the pod.
Yeah.
Really, David. I don't know if you've got anything to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I went to a really lovely, happy school until the age of 11, and then at 11 went off to Colf School for Boys, and 850 boys just with Steve Parrish. And it was, I found it a pretty depressing place. You know, Steve and I have very different memories of the school. He loves it. He thinks that we had a wonderful time, great teachers, really fun things.
Maybe he loves the taste of his own blood in his mouth.
But then, of course, he immediately changed the subject to talk about the guy who went to jail for life for killing his girlfriend while we were there.
I mean, head teacher.
Yeah, pretty much. No, drama teacher. So, it is a... It was definitely unhappy. There is something character building about it, but I would never want to put my children through it.
I would never swap it, Dave. I mean, it's just such
really?
A... Yeah,
being but would you want your children to go to a school like that?
No. But being miserable at an early age, it's just so important to go through that to understand how hard life really is.
And yet you wouldn't put your children through it.
Never.
It's very important.
Never.
And yet it's a really important foundational principle of life.
I was at school.
But your children can't go through it.
Like you were in a transitional time in England. Listen to this, America, because you're not going to believe this. In our day, it was still okay and totally normal for teachers and some of the other boys who were empowered to cane us.
Well,
to beat the crap out of us with bamboo sticks and metal rulers.
Yeah. After checking that you were not wearing underwear under your rugby shorts.
Yep. I mean, I always somehow managed to never be caned in my... Just through stealth and cunning and luck, I always avoided it.
Uh-huh.
But my general sense of suffering was reinforced at the same time by my love of Everton. Mm. Three generations of family have supported the club. I mean, it's a support which outstrips football.
Mm-hmm.
It just teaches you that life is incredibly harsh.
Mm.
Life is unforgiving. The Cossacks are behind every door. Happy moments are fleeting.
Yeah.
To be savoured with every ounce of energy you can throw at them, which I think is the most important thing in the world. Savour what you have rather than covet what you don't have.
Yeah, and always expect that your brother is going to end up with season tickets at Liverpool, Rush.
So true.
So good, Nige. I love it. Okay, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini. On Saturday, Bournemouth host Tottenham at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Later that day, it's Liverpool versus West Brom at 12:30, and Sunday, Chelsea versus Man United at 11 a.m. Two of my mates, who've never met each other before, are going to that game.
And with your season tickets?
Yeah, with my season tickets.
God.
George Ward and Bruce are sitting next to each other at that game.
It's like the worst rose ceremony of all time.
It's going to be wonderful. All of those games on the NBC family of networks. Sunday, in MLS action, Jordan Morris and the Seattle Sounders. I think they've changed their name to Jordan Morris and the Seattle Sounders. It's a great name
for
the team.
They're his backing band.
There will be a time in the future, by the way, where teams are called things like Jordan Morris and the Sounders.
Oh, I'd love that.
They host KB5's Real Salt Lake. Also a good name for a team, Rog, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage, allows
tiny.
Us to cover the costs of creating the show. What are you putting in the Amazon Emporium this week, Rog?
A book.
Oh, my
A
word.
Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. Book my wife got me for my birthday, so it's not
Amor.
One I would have chosen for myself.
I know Amor so well.
You do.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic writer.
Yeah.
He's a craftsman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read this book by your mate Amor out of obligation, then out of joy.
Yeah.
So if you're his mate, have you read it?
Nope.
What kind of a mate are you?
Not a mate who reads his books.
Support.
I read his first book.
Books.
I read his first book. Amor worked.
Second. Get off this.
Amor worked
read
in finance,
yes,
and
did.
Then he became a writer. And I read his first book, and it was excellent.
If you're
I will
a real
read
mate,
this.
You'd stop
I will
him,
read this.
Stop
I haven't
podding.
Seen Amor for a few years, but I know him well.
Oh, he's written this book. It charts the story of a
Spent
Russian
New Year's
aristocrat.
Eve with him once.
You did.
Yeah.
I hate New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
It's a novel.
Lovely wife.
Trying this. Yes. Yeah. There you are. What have you picked?
Lovely.
He's written a novel, charts the story of a Russian aristocrat sentenced to a lifetime of house arrest.
Mm.
I think he got the idea for this book when he spent New Year's Eve with you in Moscow's Metropole Hotel by the Bolsheviks during the revolution, and then over 30 years while the Cold War reigns outside the hotel. He just has to stay inside and try and stay a man of culture, try and stay living a meaningful life in the most devastating circumstances, which is pretty much how I live my life in front of the television, watching football. He's a fantastic writer, you mate, Amor. Tell him.
Yeah, I will do. I will. Next time I see him, Rog.
Tell him now. Text him.
Amor, okay, I'll text Amor right after the pod and go and do it. So, Rog, shock of all shocks. I actually read a book, Rog, which is something that very, very rarely happens.
Amor?
It's a very short
is it by
book.
Amor?
I'm not mates with this guy. It's written by Patrick Modiano. And I'm embarrassed to say...
I'm mates with Patrick.
I'd never heard of Patrick Modiano. God, he's... I don't know how many friends you have who won the Nobel Prize.
He's fantastically dark.
Won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 2014. And my God, what a writer, Rog. I found him because I was looking for a quote that I once read about. I thought it was Stendhal. It ended up being Stendhal. I cannot provide the reality of events. I can only convey their shadow, which I think about all the time when talking about football, that you can't accurately explain what happens. You've just got a shadow of it. And I was looking for that quote, and then I found that it was written as the epigraph in a book, Pourquoi tu ne perds pas dans le quartier, So You Don't Get Lost in the Neighborhood, by Patrick Modiano. And I started reading about this book, and it sounded fantastic. One, it was really short. Patrick Modiano writes really short books. I love a short book. Secondly, he's sort of very influenced by Chandler, writes in a sort of a noir style. But what are his obsessions, Rog?
The Holocaust.
But he wrote a lot about the Holocaust, wrote a lot about the Nazi occupation, but in his later years, wrote a lot about memory loss and identity. Goldfish. I love a man. One of his most famous novels, right, is about a detective who is his final case. He has to figure out how to solve actually who he is, because he's forgotten who he is. But So You Don't Get Lost in the Neighborhood, Pourquoi tu ne perds pas dans le quartier, an absolutely fantastic short book, a page-turner. I read it in one sitting. Brilliant, brilliant work. Dave-O doesn't read a lot of books, doesn't recommend a lot of books. Buy this one, hardcover, on Amazon, $13.39, Rog. What a bargain.
I can't believe you chose a book.
Yeah, I know, it's very rare. I know, I'll be back to barbecue equipment next weekend.
You can't clean a barbecue with a book, mate. I've tried.
I might try with that one. This one, if a book could clean a barbecue, it would be So You Don't Get Lost in the Neighbourhood, Rog. Okay, visit meninblazers.com to sign up for our newsletter, which we produce with our partner Guinness. There's a new issue going out this Friday. You can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, on Instagram at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies, on Facebook Men in Blazers. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To Welsh tweed.
Ricardo, rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America.
And by America, Rog means Swansea City.
Come on. Do it.
Tridini.
And by do it, I mean wear a proper outfit.